listening to Mobility Marvels, the Civitas podcast.
Civitas is a European Union initiative working with cities to make sustainable mobility a reality for all.
In this season, we will meet three pioneering projects and hear about cities daring to do mobility differently.
Inspiring stories on clean, smart, and inclusive mobility await.
I'm Priscilla Castro.
And I'm Richard Adams. We're very excited to bring you our first ever episode.
Today, we'll talk about Civitas Eccentric, one of the three Civitas Living Lab projects that has been running for the last 4 years.
Eccentric is a project that focuses on sustainable mobility in peripheral areas of cities and urban freight logistics. Historically, these two important areas have received less attention in urban mobility policies.
The project has worked in 5 living labs in 5 different countries: Munich in Germany, Madrid in Spain, Lusa in Bulgaria, Turku in Finland, and Stockholm in Sweden. Some of the great things the project has done is to test clean vehicles and fuels and to get more people walking and cycling in cities.
Will the podcast itself end up being just a bit eccentric? You'll have to stay tuned to find out. But that's enough from us. It's time to introduce our wonderful guests. Joining us today are Esther Kreutz, the project's dissemination manager, and Irene Blasquez, the project manager. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Welcome, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us today. So let's start. Can you tell us a bit more about the project's objectives? What were the main goals when you first thought about Eccentric?
Civitas Eccentric addresses so far too often neglected aspects of sustainable mobility in cities, including peripheral neighborhoods in sustainable mobility planning, and also piloting as well as urban freight logistics. Our partners have piloted and tested in those living labs that you have presented at 51 innovative measures and solutions on how to build new partnerships, innovative methods and solutions, regulations for the emergent mobility framework, invest in vehicles and infrastructure, and could see if these measures are successful and ready to be replicated and upscaled.
So additional to those two focus that we had in the project, we also concentrated in Eccentric very much on the inclusion of specific target groups, especially elderly and children, and as we call them, like the vulnerable groups. So this was also a focus in our activities and our solutions to especially have a focus on those groups, as well also as gender aspects. So it's a holistic approach on sustainable mobility planning within our main topics.
So something that you just mentioned, Irene, were the peripheral areas or suburban areas of cities. They have specific needs, but why is it that you in Eccentric decided to focus on mobility planning in such neighborhoods? Are there certain challenges that people living there face?
So, as we mentioned already, Eccentric is focusing on the peripheral neighborhoods as they have not been taken into account so far that much in mobility projects. And when we talk about peripheral neighborhoods or areas, we just want to be precise. So we addressed the areas just outside the urban centers and not the suburban areas that are even like further out there. So these peripheral areas that are kind of on the outskirts of these urban centers, they often are like a little bit like cut off by big infrastructure, like big roads or motorways, like cutting them off from the centers and making just walking, cycling difficult or even impossible for the people living there. So even the distances to the city center are perhaps not as so far. The built environment kind of has a barrier for people to move in a sustainable way. So this is one reason why we wanted to focus on that people that live in a considerable distance from the city centers. They could walk, they could bike, but they are somehow hindered by infrastructure. How can we change that? And how can we, through including these areas in the sustainable mobility planning, how can we also make these areas more attractive, more accessible, just increase the quality of life for people living there? Because they are not in the center, but they're also not far out, and they could so these areas could be used a lot more, and they could be they could just enable people to move more sustainably.
You mentioned something there about walking and cycling. Obviously, this is something that, particularly following the COVID-19 pandemic, there's lots more people getting about using these two modes. How did you go about getting people feeling safe when walking and cycling in your cities? Because as we know, that feeling of security is really vital to get people walking and cycling.
The way of making people feeling safe in these active modes like walking and cycling, it's achieved mainly making them actively during the preparation and development of the different measures that we have done. I mean, listen which are their needs and the idea they have. It's a key part from taking them into account in this planning and make them involved in the whole process. Also, technical improvements like implementing rerouting cyclist lines during the construction times, make them part and keep them well informed during the process, or developing improvement winter cycling conditions in cities from North Europe and setting up these new specific measures and the local mobility ordinance help people to feel that they are safe and they were taking care of them.
Thank you, Irene. One thing that made me curious when I first learned about the Living Lab projects is that these tests were made in different cities and even different countries, as we mentioned before. All these countries have a different regulations, different background. So I would like to hear more about how you decided what to do in each city, taking into account the different conditions and contexts in each of them.
Yeah, well, of course, this project was first of all prepared in a common effort. So, I mean, this started long time ago when this project was developed, and it was developed. We had like two preparatory meetings before we submitted the application, and it was really developed and written and discussed in very close cooperation with all the project partners. And of course, then the project partners have their local the project cities have their local consortia where they also locally discussed like what are our challenges, what are our needs now related to those topics that we addressed, like the peripheral areas and the urban freight logistics. What are our our local needs and challenges in our city that fit to there that we want to address? What are the solutions we would like to test? What are the methods we want to see if they really work and that we can use them also later on? So on one hand, it was, of course, a lot of work done in the cities. So they really had to analyze what they need. But then the whole project was brought together, like the approach of it, like what is a living lab and how should it look like and how this measure should be tested. This was something that was discussed and developed during the proposal phase.
Yeah, and also I would like to add that the definition of the measures themselves, as well as their inception and changes along the project, were defined by the cities in this continuous conversation through different phone calls, telephone conference, face-to-face meetings, emails, and all under the framework of the coordination. So actually this bottom-up approach of the project is one of the key of feasibility and successes of the majority of the measures.
Irene, you mentioned the bottom-up approach. And something that Esther already mentioned in the intro was the inclusive mobility planning that you're engaging in as part of Excentric. Typically, mobility planning is focused on an idealized middle-class male user. So how did you in Excentric go about seeking to change this and empower groups not always involved in mobility planning, so children, youth, and older people?
In Excentric, we had empowered these groups applying these new methods of working, such as co-creation methods, active listening, critical walks, and peer-to-peer approaches for local campaigns, involving children and older people in the whole process, as mentioned before. Also, intergenerational activities that we have tried to combine fun and satisfaction with high quality results and replication methods ready to share. And also, a great effort has been placed in the visibility of these elderly and teenagers' mobility through a persistent communication strategy in media, in technical congresses, in debates from the Sustainable Urban Mobility Plans, with a wide visible events such as the European Mobility Week and so on.
I would like to add here that addressing these target groups, and now when we talk about elderly people and children and young people, we addressed them also through the whole, like, how the project was built up, that we used the living lab approach. We had a test area, so to say, a real life test area in each city. So the measures and the activities, the campaigns, etc., they were really close to the people. They were visible in the living lab area. They were people were accessible, like people from the project were accessible for those other target groups. So I think this implementing this living lab approach really was a really good way to bring all these European project measures like down to the people and also to those target groups that are not the standard target group for mobility planning or the already always involved activists, let's say. I think this enabled our cities really to get in touch with those target groups.
I see that you had a lot of work with citizen engagement there from what you just said. We know that mobility transport is a hot topic nowadays. It's something that the public is showing more and more interest in. So in your quest to involve everybody and also this not so regular public, could you give us some example which kind of activities? You mentioned fun activities and bring them to the spectrum. What kind of activities did you do? How did you make people actually care about the project and get involved in it?
Well, first of all, of course, this is something that has happened differently in every city. So every local team or every city has a local dissemination manager, and together with the coordination team in each city, they have done a great work. They have developed all kind of campaigns and information events and events where they involve cities. So that's of course a very local approach. So there are really good experience in the cities that organized like more innovative ways of how they organized participative or awareness events that they haven't done before. For example, both in the city of Ruse, where they invited a wide audience to tell about their measures and to really involve them in the process and inform them all the time, which was very like a new thing for them to do. We have an example of Munich, where they exactly implemented this intergenerational exchange, what Irene mentioned now before, where young people were teaching elderly people how to use, for example, a transport planning app. The young people helped the elderly how to use your smartphone to find out when the next bus is coming, etc. So there was this kind of generations were brought together to help to learn how to use new ways of mobility, etc. So these were, for example, two examples.
Thank you, Stan. So for both of you, how do you see the relationship between offering different options for mobility in a city and public space? In your experience, are there certain things that cities have to keep in mind?
The priority for active modes actually is, and its new role in a multimodality approach has triggered a new approach for scarce public space. There is a need of space for several purposes on these new mobility schemes, like safe walking, cycling, charging networks, native solutions for climate change fight, micro halves, bus rapid transit lines for buses, surface with high quality for the new, for these public transport, e-mobility stations. So actually the large amount of public space used for parking circulating private use vehicles has to be reformulated, and the city are responsible for this relocation space within the integrated and urban mobility strategies. And actually this is one of our main challenges nowadays.
So Excentric has also worked in the area of urban freight logistics. Why is this specific area so important for sustainable mobility?
Well, urban freight logistics is one of those topics that we thought in the beginning it's something that is emerging in city centers and it's causing a lot of problems, and it hasn't been addressed as much as we would have liked, let's say. So this was one reason why this was also chosen as the one of the focus topics for Excentric. So as we all know, so urban freight logistics is increasing, and especially now or during the times of the pandemic when it started, and also when it's now still going on, and most likely also it's foreseen to still increase in the future. People order things, and things are delivered to their homes. Of course, there's the deliveries that are done to shops in the city centers, etc. And if these freight logistics are not coordinated and addressed, so there's a high volume of inefficient deliveries in the city centers. So it comes to higher congestion. It's impacting on air quality, of course. So we thought we need to see and to test how can urban freight logistics be made more clean and more efficient. And there are several ways. There's a number of measures have been tested and implemented in Excentric, and they are ranging from the coordination of freights with like consolidation centers, goes to making urban freight logistics more clean through, for example, through like silent night deliveries in logistics that they tested in Stockholm with silent electric vehicles in the night, like delivering to shops in the night, of moving logistics to the water bodies. That was also in the case of Stockholm. Of course, when you have a water bodies in the city, how can you use like alternatives to street freight transport? It can be, or there were measures on new cargo bikes combined with these depots in the city of Munich, or the fully electric like 12-ton truck and electric shift to logistics through different kind of micro hubs in Madrid. So there were different measures were tested to on one hand reduce the amount of freight trips, so to say, or freight deliveries through consolidation, but then also those trips that have to be made, how to make them more clean.
There was something that you briefly touched on there, which was 4 years ago a hot topic and is even more so today, which is mobility as a service. You as a project were one of the very first in Europe to roll out such a thing in your five cities. Based on your experience, what role do you think mobility as a service has to play in the future of mobility systems of our cities?
Yes, MaaS was indeed a new thing 4 years ago, or like 5 years ago when this project was developed. That is very true. And as we know, the mobility world is turning quite fast. So of course, a lot of things have happened in the last 4 years. I think we're really happy that we were one of those first projects really addressing MaaS. And it was also one of the measure packages, so to say, that has been gotten a lot of interest from outside of the project. We think that, I mean, cities and transport networks in cities are moving more and more towards like a multimodal network and a multimodal way for moving around. And there, MaaS, of course, is playing a key role. MaaS is the key role in making this multimodality work. It's the key for making it more user-friendly for the citizens, accessible, but also for mobility planners. So it's a great concept and a tool how multimodality can be made into practice. And it offers like different kind of options and alternatives to car, of course. So that's the big advantage that you have, and to integrate different kind of providers, different kind of modes, etc. And But of course, it also really requires that the city is actively engaging with all the stakeholders you need for a MaaS ecosystem. And that's something that has been very challenging, and I think is still very challenging for many cities. But that's something that in the future is really needed to go in that way, because, transport will go or transport in cities will need to go into this direction to multimodality. And then MaaS is a great tool for that.
We all know this year has been challenging for everybody due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So as this was also the last year of the project, I must ask, did the pandemic affect the project's work in any way? You mentioned there are more packages coming. We all know that more people were avoiding public transportation. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, actually, the pandemic hit our project cities differently harder in 2020, and cities had different approaches to handle the situation. So actually, it's not possible to generalize how it has affected to the five cities. Whereas there had been a lockdown in Spain, a partial lockdown in Germany and Finland, Stockholm has only shut down in the same extent. But still all cities and their mobility systems has been heavily affected. Actually, the project implementation was locally not that much affected, as most of the measures were finalized. Mainly was affected the evaluation, the dissemination, and partly the upscaling and the replications, as everything has to be shifted on a virtual way. Actually, the project reacted quite quickly, organizing the last program, the project management group meeting that we had in mid-March, so actually just when the pandemic hit, and we shifted it into an online, successfully world program. Also a set of webinars, shifts dissemination material to audiovisual outputs, organization. We have organized final events in this virtual way with a huge effort of changing the way of working into a virtual way.
So if you had to select some achievements from the project, you've already listed so many fantastic things. Is there a certain thing that would stand out, or a certain aspect of the work that you've done that you're particularly proud of?
As a headline, I would say that the main achievement is a successful work progress. Actually, our 51 measures are completely implemented and evaluating, even the most risky and ambitious ones. So that's actually maybe the main one. But it should be added that from cities' perspective, one of the main achievements is the development of new regulations and relevant strategies towards the sustainable mobility. And from a personal perspective, I would like to highlight how the cooperation between the five cities and developed through the 31 partners has evolved during these 4 years. So we have learned a lot from each other, from different cities, facilitating and promoting replication from each other.
Yeah, one big achievement, if I now may ask from the city perspective or for the city's perspectives, is that I think in most or in all of our project partner cities, sustainable mobility was really made more visible. It was like put out on the table, so to say. It was what Irene mentioned already, like that there were new regulations, there was new local policy. It was like made visible, and all this from a more holistic perspective, not looking at separate mobility measures that are tested and implemented, but also to look at sustainable mobility from this like integrated holistic perspective, to work with infrastructure, to work with vehicles, to with mobility management. They worked with MaaS to involve all these different kind of target groups that were perhaps not taken into account before, to have this like overall, how do we make our city and those city areas like more sustainable in terms of how the transport system works, but also how our citizens can live there and that they are enabled to live in a more sustainable way.
Having heard so many great achievements, I would also like to ask you if there's anything, when you look back at these 4 years, when you look back at the project, if there's anything that you could have done differently, or you wouldn't do it again, or you would tell cities who want to replicate the project, don't do this, don't follow this path. Is there any such thing for you?
Actually, one of the things that we could have done differently, it was maybe there was some measures that were too ambitious, that they were planned without enough caution in terms of risk mitigation. But it's really understandable as the measure has been implemented under real condition. So especially because it's hindsight's easy to see that we were too ambitious. Another thing that we could have done differently is not having involved the correct stakeholders or key person of organizations from the very beginning of the project. I mean, this thing that actually is the gold rule had implied some delays, a deviation from the initial planning. So this would be something to highlight again for further projects or further replication step of Excentric. But actually, the fact is that we have been learning by doing. So the real innovative means always carry out certain risk and political changes that are inherent in a four-year project.
Yes, I would like to add or just first understand what Irene said. I think, yeah, I would have said something similar. I would just want to point out that when you talk about replication, if you want to get tips like what how not to do things when you want to replicate a certain measure, that's a different story. And luckily, we have produced like a great set of replication packages. So if other cities are interested in specific measures and how to replicate them and then learn what perhaps not to do or which path to go or how to do it best. So that's a great resource for them to have a look at those replication packages that are all public now. But in terms of project, like what we would have done differently, we were just discussing this before actually together that there were luckily no big issues that we think that we have kind of completely failed. But we, of course, you have to take into account it's a project that is planned quite a while ago. It goes on for over 4 years. So of course, you have all these changes in the world, in society, etc., that bring some changes that you sometimes cannot anticipate.
So after those 4 long years, one very final short question for you. Would you do it all again?
Of course. Of course, especially after these lessons learned that we have got after these 4 years. So, but yeah, for sure, we'll go ahead with the same project. Yeah.
Well, I can also say now I would say yes. And especially if with all our experience in our baggage, I would also do it again. But of course, we have also learned our lessons and probably we would do it still a little bit differently, especially perhaps from our perspective, from project management and dissemination. I mean, now we know, of course, a lot more. But if we would need to go on with the same consortium, that would be a definite yes.
Well, that was a definite thumbs up for Civitas Excentric, I believe. So thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today.
And to all of you who are listening to us, if you are interested in finding out more about the project and getting more information, check out their website at civitas.eu/excentric. The link is also added here to the episode's description.
Finally, make sure that you join us for our next episode, where we'll be joined by another Living Lab project, Fortis. Until then,